Hi everyone, this is Sumo here. I'm very happy to have Charlotte Ciarconi. Am I pronouncing your last name?
You are, Ciarconi.
Yay! I was practicing. Charlotte Ciarconi, our CVP of Growth of and Ecosystem in the Cloud and Enterprise org at Microsoft. Hi Charlotte, welcome to GAS. I'm very happy to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can you please introduce yourself to us?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I am Charlotte Ciarconi, and I am CVP of Growth and Ecosystems, which is a relatively new group in Scott Guthrie's organization. So we are focused really on a kind of a two-part mission, if you will. The first being, how do we accelerate our growth and adoption of the Azure in the broader cloud ecosystem? And then once we get you into our ecosystem, how do we make sure as a customer you're super successful so that you continue to grow with us? So that's what my charter is, if you will.
That's amazing.
Very easy, right?
Very easy. Growth, ecosystem.
Absolutely.
But how do you define growth? I know you don't come from like the maybe software world. Can you maybe let's start by telling us a little bit about your career path and how did you get here? And then we can talk more about the growth and ecosystem.
Sure.
Part.
So I am actually an engineer by pedigree. Way back in the day, and I will date myself, but I started out as a software developer. I worked in and around an IBM product at the time, the AS400. I actually was part of the product team for IBM for a period of time, working with the AS400. I've done many different types of roles across many different industry verticals. Most recently, I came from Telstra. Which I was responsible for running their software group, which was a variety of investments we had done in the company to kind of start transforming the telecommunications business model into a software-based set of businesses around connectivity and associated services. Prior to that, I worked for VMware. I was SVP of their cloud services group, and one of the things I'm very proud of there is we actually, I had the team that built and delivered Cloud Foundry, which was the industry's first open source platform as a service. I also worked at EMC, where I was chief COO, actually, of their cloud division at the time, which was in and around a variety of investments. And at this time, AWS was still most predominantly known as an online book retailer. But they were starting to sell infrastructure on the side, and so we were trying to understand what that meant, and we did a variety of investments, including things like acquiring companies like Mozy, which at the time was a online consumer backup service, and branching out into SMB, along with a few other investments. I should also mention back to Telstra, you know, one of the things that I got to do there was we launched an accelerator, Murudi. I'm incredibly proud of that because it was one of really less than three at the time in the Sydney and Melbourne area of Australia. That ecosystem continued to grow in leaps and bounds, and I'm a big fan of Australia, Southeast Asia as an opportunity. We also acquired a few companies there and did a variety of investments in and around software internal to the company, including starting our own developer relations team, which was quite a new thing for Telstra at the time. And then I can go back even further than that, but I've been CEO of a tech startup. It was an Israeli-based startup that I was asked to come in and help take international. And I've run big teams for very large companies. I've run small businesses for very large companies. I've kind of done everything in between, if you will. So it's been a great career so far. But I'm super happy to be at Microsoft, for sure.
It's amazing. You had so many different level of expertise that I'm amazed right now.
Well, thank you. It's I will tell you, having the privilege to be able to work in so many different cultures, environments, every company has its own nuance. Even if you're working in the same space from one company to the next, you know, it really tests your adaptability in terms of what makes you effective here doesn't always make you effective there. And so it's a combination of skills and, you know, communications and culture that you have to be able to adapt to and learn as you go.
That's amazing. You touched based on the fact that you worked on the cloud business for the last, 7 years, maybe from the beginning of the cloud infrastructure. And you touched based on a little bit of like ecosystem and startups. So what's your plan of using everything you know in these two fields at Microsoft and this growth and ecosystem new organization?
Well, I think we have a massive opportunity. It's fascinating to me to kind of walking in the door and learning more than what you would know publicly about the history of the cloud within Microsoft and the teams that have been part of this journey, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years, have just done a tremendous amount of work, both at a product, technology, and go-to-market level to kind of accelerate the growth and adoption of Azure to where we are today. I think moving forward, you know, we have a few things that we've got a few points of light that we've got to go tackle and accomplish to kind of get to where we need to go. The first is, you know, it's a constant, in order to increase growth and adoption, you have to make yourself relevant to the biggest population that you can, right? To create that ecosystem effect. And for me, it's as simple as, how do we make our stuff easier to use? I think we have a tremendous amount of talented engineers here at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. We ship exceptional code in terms of quality and integrity. But where we need to do a better job is helping people understand how to use it in a self-service way. Mm-hmm. So it's as simple as, how do you learn to ship product and not code? Yeah, it comes with, how do you think about things like documentation and online resources and knowledge bases that you can expose when you launch new products or features so that people don't have to have any handholding or pre-existing, you know, PhDs in your product to know how to actually take advantage of the value that they can go create with it. Mm-hmm. So a big part of how we started on this journey, thinking first and foremost about growth and adoption, is how do we make our stuff easier to use? And we've had a significant transformation. Quite frankly, it started prior to me, but I've kind of gotten religion around it and really been pushing it along with Scott about how do we actually up-level our documentation and make it actually something that people can easily consume and use, because that's the biggest single lever that we can pull to help increase our outreach, right? Mm-hmm. There's a variety of other online assets. Channel 9 is a great example of that too. I'm super excited that Channel 9 has recently come over to CNE. You know, I think that's another fantastic outreach tool that we're gonna have and an asset that we can use. So first and foremost, making sure that we actually have usable products and usable in a self-service and intuitive way. Mm-hmm. I think the other piece of that is actually also being able to almost reinvent evangelism, if you will, to think about how we do that in a motion that's more about being extremely focused on technical communities, mm-hmm. that are driving the new workloads into the cloud. How do we go think about building advocacy and thought leadership within those technical communities? And as part of that, we recently launched a new group, and we've been in the process of recruiting for that, so it's still in build form, if mm-hmm. you will, mm-hmm. Around developer advocacy. And it's a matter of actually going out and being part of the technical communities, some of which, you know, are our technologies like .NET, where mm-hmm. we're deeply grounded in that, some of which are open source technologies, right, that we have to go focus on, and everything in between. So we've spent a lot of time kind of looking at where is all the latest and greatest development happening, and the reality is we have to go out and participate and be active in those communities more so than we've been before, again, to create an ecosystem by which gets excited about our products and services, and we create connective tissues in between the two, right? So we want people writing in Python to build on Azure as much as we want people writing in .NET to build on Azure. And we have to have a focus about caring and cultivating and participating in those ecosystems. So that's been a big part of it as well. Mm-hmm. I think the third leg of the stool, if you will, that I would talk about is, and it goes to sort of the second part of my charter, which is, even once you do all that, once customers get engaged with you and they're part of your ecosystem, are you giving them a great experience across all the products and services? Mm-hmm. So spending a lot of time on our commercial experience with our partners in UST and a lot of the modern replatforming efforts that we're doing across the company. Yeah, we've got a tremendous amount of tooling and legacy in our business today that kind of started out with the seat-based and license-based motion that we had first with Windows and then obviously with Office coming on board. Cloud is very different because you first and foremost, it's a completely different business model in the sense that you're basically enabling people to buy resources from you by the drip. Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing. And I think it's been a huge inflection point in the industry. It's changed a lot of behaviors and it's actually accelerated innovation overall because people have more immediate and optimized access to resources. But along with that, when you allow people to start consuming IT resources that way, they need the ability to manage them that way, to optimize them that way. It's a very dynamic interchange as opposed to a static commercial relationship that you need to build. And so we're spending a lot of time on how do we build those experiences that give the customer the right tooling they need to manage their cloud, as well as that it's something that's optimized and cost efficient for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is very helpful. I'm going to just try to summarize the three things, right? Everyone is welcome on Azure, mm-hmm. even if you're not .NET or open source. We will build great documentation for you, even if you don't know anything about Microsoft. It's going to be easier for you to be on Azure. And the third one is how the tooling system will be easier for you.
Absolutely.
On Azure. Yay,
you got it. That was much more succinct than I did.
No, I like your description, but I like also to summarize. So we know where we're hidden. It's really, I like it. I like it when we know exactly where we're going and what's the strategy that we need to follow. So I've been spying on you a little bit online.
Okay.
I saw one of your videos from 2014 talking about growth and ecosystem on mm-hmm. the Telstra, I think.
Telstra. Yeah.
So I was like, yay, she's really the expert about growth and ecosystem.
No, I'm definitely not the expert. And this goes back to, it's actually understanding, the first thing you have to do is understand the ecosystem you live in. And then you're never going to own the ecosystem. You're never going to be an expert on all the different pieces of it. But knowing where you can add value, where you can help, sometimes it's just connecting communities together that live in that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's taking leadership in one community that's kind of not where the rest of the ecosystem is in order to get the whole ecosystem healthy. Every ecosystem, every region, every industry, again, there's always nuances that you have to be prepared for. So I would say I'm not an expert at growth in ecosystems. I am well adept at walking into new places and trying to understand what's needed and working together with always a great team to go make it happen. But it's never, anybody who shows up and says, I'm an expert on growth is not an expert on growth in my mind.
Okay, fair enough. So you worked on the cloud since the beginning, it seems. And it's still, I think, when did the cloud start? 2008 or 7, something like this?
Yeah, yep.
10 years. So even after 10 years, it's still hard to understand the cloud. Is it everywhere, or what's the problem? What's the problem? Why is it still hard to understand the cloud?
I don't actually think it is hard to understand the cloud. I mean, it's really, and believe it or not, you know, I think even consumers, even everyday users, I love it that my dad, who just turned 90 this year, where photography was sort of his second career when he retired at the ripe old age of 74, I believe. He actually understands the cloud because he backs up all his pictures into a device that is not his computer. He had his personal computer, you know, die on him a few times because, as you can well imagine, he doesn't do the best job keeping up with all the patches and operating systems and maintenance. And he eventually figured out that he could, you know, use a service that could keep all of his pictures and all of his data in a secure place, and he just didn't even have to worry about it anymore. That's what the cloud means to him. It's a place for his photographs, right? With many other users, it's a place by which they can do business. If you're a developer, it's a place that you can go get compute storage, you know, a network to go build a new solution where you don't actually have to go buy your own equipment and find a data center to run it in. I think the cloud has gotten mainstream enough that people understand because of how they use it, that what the importance of it is. I think what's still kind of confusing is how the world of IT and consumption has kind of changed over the years with cloud. And I'll give you a great example. You know, when smartphones came out, and you may not be old enough to remember this, but I remember it. I remember when I was at work and I had a work phone that the IT guy, you know, managed, and I could only have certain applications loaded on it. And at the time, that was fine. There weren't a lot of applications you could do mobily anyway. But I wasn't supposed to make personal calls on it, right? And then I had my personal phone. Mm-hmm. And when smartphones came out and app stores started coming out and the ability to actually do whatever I needed to do mobily without a hard, you know, a wired, landline wired device sitting somewhere, that's what the real changing point. And there was an inflection at one point where the IT guys kind of lost the battle because people got tired of carrying a personal phone and a work phone and said, no, we're going to use one phone. And then bring your own device, sir, right? Kind of took over, and that's how the world shifted. And today, that's kind of how it works. In cloud, it's a very similar thing. You know, you could start out as a developer in your own time, building, you know, learning, doing continuing education on different skills and tools. You can have a private subscription on your cloud of choice and get yourself skilled and learned in an activity. And then you go to your day job where you're a project manager for a company that's responsible for building a new solution. What are you going to typically rely on? You're going to rely on what you know, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever cloud you're using personally is probably what you're going to take into the workplace with you. If you're an enterprise that's dealing with a lot of disruption, it really doesn't matter what industry you're in. You know, you take Hilton or Marriott, who looks at Airbnb, right? And says, well, I'm going to build my own Airbnb-like app, if you will, mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, be able to service my properties in that business model, because that's a new business model that this new company that's brought in, right, yeah. that I have to compete with. And then you take that and you actually look at how does that get, Marriott could build it and Hilton could come along and say, hey, I want to use that, right? And they go from being an enterprise to an ISV, right? So you find a lot of companies are building their own SaaS applications that still today are kind of valuable within a particular industry, but they can start being shared within the industry, or they can be consumed in the industry perspective. So they kind of extend beyond the walls or boundaries of just being a solution only valuable to that enterprise. So that cross-pollination of the different types of users of IT that used to be pretty curated channels or segments, it all gets blended in this new world of cloud. And I think that's a behavior and an inflection point that we're still learning and understanding as an industry who's trying to service the rest of the world and help you create value through your products and services. And how do we enable that such that the cross-pollination, and you could be at work, at home, an individual, an enterprise, a partner, a company, you know, and we're creating value that you can carry from one to the other in trusted and secure ways is still part of the journey, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense how you linked the cloud to the consumer of how we're, it's all about how we're using it, and it's all about how we're feeling about it.
That's right. And I think that continues to evolve. I think a decade from now, the behavior around the cloud is going to be significantly different, right? And it's going to continue to evolve in that way. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this is about the cloud, and I love how you're passionate about the cloud. This is amazing.
I am very passionate about the cloud.
So you touched a little bit about the ecosystem part, and you said you worked on startups a lot. So it seems like you're passionate about startups. Do you think this is something we need to focus more on at Microsoft, or do you have any plans about including more startups into the ecosystem world, or what's your point on that?
So I am very passionate about startups. I will tell you, I've had a great career. I've learned a tremendous amount. I can think back on a few jobs that were really, truly inflection points for me. And one of the ones that, the first one that always comes to mind is when I went to work as a CEO for a startup that had, you know, burned through all its initial funding of cash, was a heavy data grid type product, so it was pretty extensive on the product development side. Still hadn't completed product development, didn't have any customers, was running out of funding. There was a tremendous amount that I learned in the couple of years that I worked in that startup as CEO. I got to be everything from the janitor to, you know, the captain to anything in between. And when you're that fragile in your maturity as a company, when you're still trying to figure out what your value proposition is, how do you go to market, who are going to be your ultimate customers, you know, you have a view on all these things when you start and when you start those types of businesses. But the lack of resourcing, time, and funding require, mandate that you be, you know, super honest with yourself at all times, right? Mm-hmm. And it also creates a sense of urgency that, you know, it's not that big companies don't have urgency, but it's just a different form of humiliation. Yeah. An education that you received that was tremendously rewarding to me. And I learned more in those years than I probably did in any other, you know, if I took any other point in time in my career, same amount of time and anywhere else, I don't know that it was compressed humiliating as it was. And I don't mean humiliating in a bad way. I mean just in terms of you really get focused on what you got to do. And it does create a different perspective on what really counts versus what doesn't count. And I found that experience was tremendously valuable to me. So I have an affection for startups, having been there and understanding the variables that you have to deal with. Again, it's not that more mature companies don't have pressures and they don't have issues, but they're different. And so I have great appreciation for the challenges that you face when you're an entrepreneur and you start out on your own. I think the other piece of it, though, to me, and really the thing to just keep in mind is innovation happens everywhere. The more mature you are, whether you're an individual or a company, whatever, it sometimes gets a little harder to do because you have more responsibilities and more assets around you that you gotta kind of have to keep while you're still looking at the next greatest thing. That's usually a challenge of larger companies. But startups, they do kind of represent a lot of the new workloads that are ultimately going to be that mainstream activity in a few years from now. So I think it's super important that we ensure we have healthy startups globally, that we have a healthy ecosystem, that our products and services are creating value for that audience, and that all those new workloads are going to be great fit for our cloud going forward. I mean, ultimately, that's what they represent to me, along with the fact that they also just represent, you know, the entrepreneurship and innovation that, again, happens kind of everywhere. But you know, they require care and feeding because you want them to be successful ultimately. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, we're doing a lot of stuff across Microsoft already today when it comes to startups. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely happy that, you know, part of what's come over to my group is the Microsoft Accelerator Program. A lot of the programs around how are we actually supporting and creating offers to support the BizSpark family of offers is also something that's part of my group now. And then I just think, how do we connect a lot of what the startups see and feel and face in terms of what's happening out there? What are some of the new innovations that are coming? How do they relate to our products and services? How do we create a feedback loop between what they're doing in the wild, how it's gaining traction, how our products and services need to support it? And vice versa, that whole life cycle, I think, is hugely important to our success going forward.
Yeah, that's. I think I definitely get it. I mean, we have. I work with the PM who's working on the BizSpark. He's in my team. Mark, hi, Mark. I don't know if he watches. I get a lot of insight about what's going on, and it's a great area to be in. Yeah. Startups for Microsoft, there's a lot of work to do, but it's a great area.
It is a great dynamic area. And it's always amazing to me to go do things like accelerators and judging on panels. Even our Imagine Cup, which is more at the university level, but that's another source of innovation coming from students. It's amazing how people can think outside the box, whatever the box is, right? Just some of the thoughts and ways to either better ways to solve existing problems, or having a view of what's the next exponential curve that's going to happen in the world, be it climate change, be it something else. And how do you go tackle that in a proactive way? It's just as fascinating. It's really neat. I enjoy it a lot.
Definitely. I'm going to change the subject a little bit and talk about the challenges. So as a woman in tech, and as a person who went through so many different career paths, can you tell us a little bit about the challenges that you had and what were your tools to go beyond these challenges?
I actually have been extremely fortunate in my career in that I have always had really good female role models. And I would love to tell you that was because I was super smart and, seeked them out. I think in a lot of ways they found me and it was a great thing. I have been in tech a long time, longer than you. So having grown up in this space and having watched the space still in the process of maturing, I might add, I think a lot of good has happened over the years, and I think we have more to go. I would say that the thing we need to remember when we think about gender, culture, race, I've touched on a few of these things, the reason why you want to embrace these, I think the reason why any company, any team, any leadership really wants to embrace these things is because what you're looking for is diversity in thought, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't get that if you get just a bunch of people that, came from the same socioeconomic background as you, they dress like you, they went to the same school as you, they have the same, environment as you. You don't get that diversity of thought. And it's so important in today's economy, which is global by default. Unless you're a very nuanced industry or sector, you are a global entity, and you have to have that collective view of what that means. You have to have a representation through your management team that's diverse enough to think through all the variables that happen across this world of ours, right? So, to me, I think the challenge that still exists today is I think there's been certainly in the last 5 or 6 years a big push to have more diversity. Microsoft's done a great job of it, but most of the companies, particularly in the tech sector, have been very focused on that, and that's all goodness. But beyond just thinking about how you go collect that diversity, being thoughtful about what it represents and how you actually can create a more diverse thought, set of products, missions, goals, et cetera, is really the challenge, right? And it's something that I have a lot of passion about because I do. Look, for me coming into Microsoft, it's not just that I'm a female and I'm in the product group. I also haven't been in this company for decades, right? And a lot of the peers that I go meet at my level, that it was probably one of the most overwhelming things for me walking in the door and having most people introduce themselves to me as, they've been here 20 years and 25 years, 19 years. That's hugely impressive for a company in the tech sector to be able to retain that kind of talent for that long of a time. It's highly unusual. But for me, and as someone walking in the door, it's also slightly overwhelming because you worry that, everybody's been here so long and they're in such an encapsulated culture. Can they, is it really a place that's open and receptive to people who've come from
new
different
ideas.
Places and spaces. And I have been very pleasantly impressed with that. I have met enough folks that have been here 2 years, 3 years, 1 year. So, I think Microsoft has made a big push to be bringing new mindsets, new blood, new leadership in to kind of couple it with the successful people that have been with the company a long time, and that's a great thing. But that's ultimately the challenge, and I think it's always been the challenge, right? Whether it's you were with the company for so long and you're a new person, whether it's your the one female that was hired into a leadership team of predominantly males, or whether it's you're the non-U.S. citizen that was hired into a management team of only U.S., you know, folks that have been in the U.S. or all these things create challenges, but the more you can embrace them from a leadership perspective, the better you'll be, because getting that diversity of thought into your organization is super important. And I have just been fortunate enough to have found a career in and around people that thought that way and felt that way and taught me that value standard, that it's something that I hope I do by default, right? I mean, that's really important to me. So, but it's probably the one learning I've had. I don't know that I'd call it a challenge as much as this is really important to having an effective team, right? Mm-hmm. And an effective product and service.
Yeah, definitely. I like your answer of embracing these challenges rather than maybe trying to hide or something. A question that I ask everyone who comes to the show is, why do you think we need more women in tech in general?
Well, again, it's the same answer.
It looks like you already answered. It's not more women, it's more diversity.
It's more diversity, and it's diversity of thought, right? Women, people of different religion, people come from different cultures. Whenever you interact with somebody that's not like you, you're going to get a different perspective. Right. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing, right? It's that diversity that actually makes you better equipped for the broader audiences you're trying to serve. So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm very happy I answered a question ahead of the question.
Yeah, I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Okay, she already answered. That's great. Okay. Off the camera, I asked you what's the thing that you're passionate about. You said it's more like a STEM education. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I have two daughters. I have a 20-year-old who just finished her junior year at Reed College. She's majoring in linguistics. Exceptionally talented at language and literature, but a great student because she's an overachiever. So she's always had good grades across the board, but I would say that's her passion and her mm-hmm. talent. I have a 10-year-old who just finished fifth grade. She's, I think, what the school system calls highly capable. Mm. She is amazing in the sense that she taught herself how to code mods in Minecraft at age 7, and then started coding in Scratch. And she recently just finished a set of online courses around Python. She's doing coding camp this summer in Java. She actually writes her own apps now. She writes things like a Magic 8-Ball app where you type in a question, and it's the computer equivalent of shaking the old Magic 8-Ball and it giving you an answer.
Oh, so nice.
And
then the bot or something?
She wrote it in Python. It's just
nice.
Yeah. So she is she's very passionate about that and has decided that she wants to have a field and a career in computer science in a way that actually helps animals. She doesn't actually know what that is yet, but she also is fanatic about animals. So and I'm supportive of that. But you know, I having gone through that personal experience with her where, quite frankly, she's taken the initiative. She's gotten super excited about technology. She's not the overachiever. She's an incredibly bright child, but you know, she's not necessarily, if she's not motivated to do something, then she won't do it. And what I really appreciated is the fact that just exposing her to technology, getting her excited about some of the use cases that are out there has really created that excitement in her. And that's what we need. You know, a lot of people probably underappreciate the fact that we don't make all these advancements as a human race without a lot of really smart people kind of breaking glass, breaking the mold, breaking something, you know, to create a breakthrough in innovation that creates a new way of life for us. And too often we have a lot of news about how we do all that in the wrong way, where we are destroying the Earth's resources and, you know, we're building these military powers that are beyond dangerous and all these other things, you know. But the reality is we don't appreciate enough how far we've come as the human race and the fact that it requires a lot of really smart people to be able to go do that. And so I'm super, super passionate about starting STEM education getting kids excited about that, you know, earlier rather than later. I have my own personal journey with my youngest daughter that I've been able to go through and watch the excitement and just really appreciate her ability to think beyond wherever I was thinking when I was her age, or even her sister who's 10 years older who was at her age, and be able to push those boundaries. And I, you know, I have great hopes for her, but I have great hopes for all the kids. They just need the opportunity. And I think we as a society must have that if we're going to continue to kind of carry on and make progress as a society. So that is something I'm hugely passionate about. I'm maybe slightly biased towards girls in STEM, mm-hmm. because I just don't find there's enough of them there. And I do think that's a little bit of a stereotype that needs to be broken. We're kind of at that place, mm-hmm. To be able to do that. But yeah, I think it's super important. And again, something I'm extremely proud to work at Microsoft in this regard, because I think Microsoft is the company that offers a platform to enable these kinds of things. And that to me is hugely important.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it reminds me of a lot of things we saw at Build.
Absolutely.
And the Satya keynote, inclusive, being inclusive and helping every person and every organization to achieve more. I have done my badge, guys, so I know it by heart.
I think Satya's keynote at Build was, I mean, it was really, it was a very sincere moment for him, but it was also something that I think resonated with each and every one of us as employees of Microsoft. And I also feel like it had the same impact for our valued customers and partners. But, you know, with the opportunity of having a company like Microsoft that represents an amazing platform of products and services to go create value out there in the world, it does come with a responsibility. And that responsibility starts with, you know, how do you leave this place better than where you found it, mm-hmm, at mm-hmm. the beginning? And there's somebody famous who said that. I won't take credit for the quote, but that's sort of how I view it. And Satya's keynote touched me personally deeply. I think I was telling you, you know, I was telling my husband after the show, I was like, holy cow, I'm tearing up at a trade show. What is going on? I mean, it was that emotional of a touch point for all of us. And I think it's important to remember that and have that same passion towards the things we each care about, right? Which will be different for each one of us. Mm. But STEM is one of those for me, for sure. Absolutely.
I definitely agree. And I like how this change is going. And like, we don't have to wait for politics or philanthropies to help the world move faster, but everyone can help at its level.
Everyone should help. That is the responsibility, right? Whether or not the administration or the policy is there that makes it easier or harder for you is doesn't take away from the fact that that's each of our responsibility to go do, right?
Yes. Before we go to the lightning round, I wanted to ask, what's your favorite thing that has been said at Build? What's your favorite new feature or new thing?
I loved Rima's note about Cosmos DB. That announcement was pretty cool. And I think I've really enjoyed reading the press and follow-ups around it. A lot of people think, oh, this is the answer to Google Spanner. Really is some compelling tech. That team deserves a ton of credit. And look, there were oodles of great announcements at Build. So I don't want to take away from anybody else's, but that one was one of my personal favorites.
Yeah, it's funny because one of the Channel 9 engineers, he was like Skyping me. I was at Build and he stayed in the office and he was, I want to use Cosmos DB right now. This is like Christmas for me.
I know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, they were very, very excited, the devs. So I can't even imagine like all the devs around there in the community, how they were also excited about this.
Yes, everybody's very excited about
that. Okay, to the lightning round.
Lightning round, all
okay.
right.
Okay, what's the first thing you do in the morning when you wake up?
I feed my dog and feed my child.
and then I
get coffee.
Okay, coffee or tea, then coffee. Yeah. So you're answering even before the question.
That's
amazing.
There you
go. Do you still code? If yes, what's your favorite language to code in?
I do not still code decent code. But I have been coding actually Python has been the one I've done the most recent because I have to keep up with my daughter.
Right.
So, yeah.
Nice. What's your most useless gadget?
My most useless gadget. My Bluetooth headphones.
You don't use them?
I don't use those. I thought I would really like them, and they run out of battery so quick, and I can't do conference calls on them, that I actually, it was a waste of my money.
Okay, then you just said that I should not buy them, because I'm thinking about buying them.
I know. I actually bought a really nice pair, and they lasted about a week, and then I got tired of them.
Okay. Good call. I'll not buy them. I'll wait until the battery becomes better.
There you go.
Do you listen to music when you work, and what kind of music?
Yes, I do listen to music. My all-time favorite band is Rage Against the Machine.
Wow, I love that band.
So I do like a little bit harder music. So, but you know, I like actually all sorts of music. But I would have to say, I listen from everything to Skrillex to punk to pop. But Bulls on Parade, Rage Against the Machine is always my favorite rally cry. Yeah.
Nice. I started just learning guitar like 2 months ago with my husband, and we're like all punk and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's fun to
being a product of growing up in the 90s, you know, punk was a good thing to be into.
It's still a good thing.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely.
It's still a good thing. Okay, what else that I had? Oh, what's a product that you dream to work on, even if it's not a Microsoft? Just between us, says between us.
There are. I don't know that it's a product, but okay. I actually think one of the biggest issues that we're going to face here, we're already facing it. We're just in this weird denial as a society about is climate change. And I think there are some upcoming advancements that are going to have huge impact on our ability to tackle that, first quell it, and then to go figure out how to tackle it. Whether it's colonizing different planets or figuring out ways to start, you know, preserving resources and potentially organically getting to different resource mixes to sustain ourselves here. I think quantum computing is a huge inflection point in sort of the next evolution. You know, when you can think about putting the processing power that exists in an entire data center in basically the size of a refrigerator moving forward, it has a lot of potential consequences of being able to do that all good, right? It has the ability to increase our ability to ask questions and get answers and solve problems. It has the ability to help us start preserving valuable resources. That's an area that's hugely fascinating to me. I'm not a quantum physicist, so I'm not necessarily equipped to go solve those problems, but it's one of these areas that I'm really interested in.
Nice. Well, on that, is there anything you want to conclude with? Any advice you want to give to someone hesitating to go into STEM, or how to help the humanity with technology?
I think everybody is going to have things that they care deeply about. To me, technology has always represented an enablement, right? And so it's not the answer, it's the enabler to what you're trying to achieve. And so I think regardless of what your passion is, there's a role for technology there. And how you support it and sponsor it, you just got to start trying, right? You just got to get out there and start helping. And I think that's really what we're all here at Microsoft doing. But anybody out there in the wild, you know, that's the way to think about it. Don't be intimidated by whatever it is that you have great passion about. Go do it.
Awesome. So. I love that. Go do it.
Go do it.
Thank you, Charlotte, for being a guest. That was great. I hope you loved also the interview.
Yes.
Everyone, put your thoughts in the comments, and thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bye.